You have a Bible, we're going to be in Luke chapter 2, verses 1 through 5 this morning, Luke 2, 1 through 5. I want to give you a quick update. A couple of weeks ago, I told you about a gift that had been given of $10,000 for a challenge match to go towards Pastor Dave Bruns and also Paradise, California, and their church, just to help with the devastation that has taken place there. And there, so there was this match, and we were hoping that we could raise enough to match the $10,000, and we barely reached it at $42,000. Isn't that great? So it's just a great reminder of this idea of serving the world sacrificially. So thank you for your generosity. Luke chapter 2, 1 through 5. I've already called the ushers. If you need a Bible, slip a hand up. We've got some ushers that'll come down and give you a Bible if you need one. Borrow it this morning. Today I'm beginning a Christmas series entitled Christmas Just Got Real. And you might recognize the REAL, the acronym. I did a series on it. I also use this in leadership development. But it means reliant on God, emptied of self, authentic in relationship, and light of the world. And as I was preparing this sermon series, this Christmas series, I noticed how real fits into Luke chapter 2. And I want to begin today by talking about how we can live our lives reliant on God because of His plan. For a few years, I wore contact lenses, and I wore them for many years, and then I graduated to, and I thought, well, I'm going to get glasses too, single vision glasses, and I'll wear those, and part-time, and I'll wear contact lenses part-time, and kind of went back and forth for that for a while. And then I graduated to no-line bifocals. I guess that's a graduation, right? And so I started wearing those all of the time. And then I graduated again a number of years ago to no-line trifocals or progressive lenses. I don't know if any of you have progressive lenses, but when I first got them a few years ago, I called the eye doctor back and I said, these aren't right. I can't see out of these. I felt like I was in one of those house of mirrors at an amusement park, you know what I mean? Like I couldn't find my way. And they said, well, just be careful too when you're walking downstairs, because it'll feel like you're kind of floating, like you're trying to find the next stair to look down at your feet. And I thought, well, that's no way to go through life. I mean, to walk around and have to look at my feet. In the same way that our eyes in real life seem, at least for many people, to worsen over time, our spiritual eyes can do the same thing. And my desire this morning is to show you in God's Word the importance of having spiritual progressive lenses. When we look through all three sections of the lens, it will help us to trust God's plan, especially during times when, like this, like we wonder, what is God up to? Or we wonder if God cares, or we wonder if God is aware, or we wonder how what we're going through, how can this possibly be for my good? And this morning we're going to look at Luke 2, 1 through 5 through three different places on the lens of life. And if we're going to live God-reliant lives, we need to see God in the distance. We need to obey God in the intermediate and experience God in the near. So number one, if you're following along, see God in the distance, verses 1 and 2, it says, in those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria. We'll just stop right there for now. There is so much below the surface in these first couple of verses. And at first glance, it kind of feels like a history lesson because we learn about an emperor and a census and the Roman world. But I want to take a minute and see God in the distance by looking through the top part of the lens. Often we find ourselves fixated on the here and now, consumed by routines, swallowed by the urgent. And maybe even for some of us, we find ourselves stuck in a rut in life. All we need to know about life is as far back as we can possibly see that our memories will allow us, and as far forward in the future as we can imagine. When we only look through single vision glasses, we have the tendency to live self-reliant and not God-reliant. We can find ourselves just putting one foot in front of the other. I don't know if you've ever been like this in life, marking time through another hour, another day, another week, another month. There are two attributes of God that are reassuring as we look out into the distant past and also the distant future. And if you're not familiar with these terms, I encourage you to write them down because they're very, very helpful in understanding the attributes of God. God is both transcendent, that's the first word, meaning God is that he exists outside of time and space. And he's immanent. Now, that's a different word than what you might be used to. It's not I-M-M-I, as in the Lord could return at any moment. It's I-M-M-A-N-E-N-T, and it means God is present within time and space. So he's both nearby in our lives, but he's also far away. For an example of God's transcendence, we turn to passages like Isaiah 55:9. It says this, "As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." And it presents to this idea that God exists out of time and space, and he is in a whole different realm. For an example of God's immanence, God is present in space. We see that in like Colossians 1:17, "In him all things hold together." Now, some people say that because these two attributes of God are so polarizing, they cannot both be true. They say that God cannot exist outside of time and space and also inside time and space. It's attributes like these that make God God. The fact that God exists outside of time and space as we know it and yet can be involved in our lives is certainly, it's mind-boggling. But if God doesn't boggle our mind, then we're not seeing God for who he really is. These two attributes of God are some of the main reasons that we can live this idea of being God-reliant lives. His plan for us is never compulsive. It's never reactive. It's never spontaneous. This is something that's really cool. His plan for our lives exists in him outside of time and space and is carried out within time and space. He is transcendent and holds the master plan. He is immanent and works in our lives for our good and his glory. Knowing these two attributes helps us to get below the surface and see far more than what we see on the surface in these first couple of verses. An emperor, a census, the Roman world, they are not the sum of a convenient opportunity for God to carry out his plan. All three were, in fact, the fulfillment of his transcendent plan. They were not random pieces to a puzzle. They were the key pieces to the puzzle. So according to verse 1, Caesar, who many people will say was the greatest emperor ever, he issues this decree and that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. Rome took a census about every 14 years. They did it for two reasons, military and tax reasons. And each Jewish male would go back to the town of his father. And they would record things like their name and their occupation and their property and their family members and so on. So let's take a minute and look through the distant part of the glasses so that we can get a better understanding of God and how he orchestrates and carries out this perfect plan. If we look far back, as we can see, the idea of 700 plus years before Jesus was born, God began to introduce his plan through a promise. And this is this transcendent plan. Isaiah 7, you might be familiar with it. It says, "Then Isaiah said, 'Hear now, you house of David, is it not enough to try the patience of humans? Will you also try the patience of God also? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel.'" So here's Isaiah 700 plus years earlier in the midst of turmoil that was taking place, was used by God for this announcement, this message of hope. God was promising a deliverer during a time when the people felt like there's no hope. After Isaiah's announcement, time marched on. Israel continued to go through ups and downs. They were exiled for 70 years. And then this period of time came of 400 years. It's called the silent years of God. And Israel had gone from a powerful God-fearing nation to a minor territory in the midst of larger empires. So the people of Israel needed the promise of God as their anchor to get them through another day, another year, another season. And although Caesar Augustus had something else in mind through this census, he wasn't thinking at this level. He demanded all people to be a part of. God used him to fulfill prophecy, this transcendent plan. And when we look to see God through this distant lens of life, we're reminded that God's plan for us is also transcendent, kept in him in eternity past, present, and future. When we fail to see God in the distant, we lose sight of who God really is. And the only way to see God for who he really is to see him in the distant. To know that God's plan is transcendent and eternal. To know that God is all-powerful and that he's all-knowing. To know that God has been working, listen, for thousands of years for the good of your life in his glory. When we see God through the distant part of our lens, our view of God just greatly increases. Our trust level, when we can see him through that lens, our trust level goes through the roof because we see God's hand of faithfulness in our lives. Our desire to know God more increases because we have it tasted of his enormity. And we experience peace at an all new level because the bigger that God gets as we look at him through this lens, the bigger that he gets, the things of this world fade away. God is working his eternal plan in you. He's not making your life up each day when your feet hit the floor. His plan to save you and to work in you is not something God figured out at the last minute. He didn't wing it. He had a plan from the beginning. In fact, the Bible tells us that God's plan existed from eternity. Ephesians 1:4, this is what it says. For he chose us in him before the creation of the world. Before the creation of the world to be holy and blameless in his sight. To trust God's plan for your life, we have to see God in the distance. Secondly, obey God in the intermediate. We'll just go on to verse 3. It says this, and everyone went to their own town to register. When we don't see God through the distant part of the life lens, through his word and through life experiences, when we don't see him, we struggle to obey God in the intermediate. The Bible presents this idea that our love for God and obedience to God are kind of intertwined. Nazareth to Bethlehem was about 100 miles. It would take somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 to 10 days. And this passage says that Joseph went there to register with Mary. A simple census, it appeared. Did Mary and Joseph recognize the hand of God calling them to the royal city? We don't really know. All we know is that they just followed the law, which allowed them to take their place in history and in God's plan. As I said a minute ago, I want to repeat this. When we see God through the distant part of our lens, our view of God is greatly increased and our trust level goes through the roof because we see God's hand of faithfulness. What does that mean? Here's what it means, Philippians 2:13. This verse is so awesome. Listen, for God is working in you. If you are a believer here this morning, God is working in you right now. He doesn't sometimes work and other times not work. He is working in you right now. And then it goes on and says this, listen to this. Giving you the desire and the power to do what pleases him. God is working in you right now to give you the desire for him and the power that you need to do what pleases him. So if you're a believer, you're a part of the story of redemption. Your life is woven into the tapestry of God's plan. God had a plan to save you and his plan to meet you on the mountaintops of life when everything is going great. Or those times in life, the plateaus, or even in the valleys of life. And as he unveils his transcendent plan, he invites us to walk in obedience to his word and all that he's called us to. So as we look through the intermediate part of life's lens, our faith increases as we begin to see God's involvement in our life. So a question for you. Are you seeing God's involvement in your life? To trust God's plan for your life, see and obey God in the intermediate. Thirdly, experience God in the near. Verses 4 and 5 goes on. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and the line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. There was an article in the New York Times telling about how executives at a Houston airport were trying to deal with customer complaints about the long lines at baggage claim. Now, we've never experienced that, right? Most of us have experienced it, of course, before, and we've all stood at a carousel for several minutes waiting for our bag to drop, and so we can understand a little bit of what they're talking about here. So the executives knew that they needed to address it, and the first thing that they did was really smart, is they hired more baggage handlers in the back so they would get the bags out quicker, and then that would satisfy people, right? So that was their answer to it, and they did it. And they got the wait time all the way down to 8 minutes, which was above the industry standard. But guess what? People still complained. It was still taking too long. But they noticed something through their studies. No one complained about their walk between the arrival gate and the baggage claim. Now, in this case, it was only 1 minute. It was a 1 minute walk. No complaint about the walk. Just the wait once they got there. So what did they do? You've probably already guessed it. They moved the arrival gate farther from the baggage claim so people would have to walk further and not have to wait as long once they got there. And it solved the problem. So much so that people started writing compliments to the airport because their bags were waiting on them by the time they got there. Here's what they concluded. It's what you do while you are waiting that makes a difference. In the article, they interviewed an MIT researcher who claimed to be the world's leading expert on waiting. I don't know how he got the title. I mean, you could probably have the title, right? We can all have that title. I've waited a long time. It seems like one of those titles that you can just make up and no one would ever question you. Have you ever made up a title for yourself? Like, I could say, I'm the world's leading expert on grief. My specialty is working with Vikings fans. I could say that. Now, you knew something was coming. I didn't preach last week, right? Let's keep going. This leading expert on waiting said what they discovered is actually predictable. When people don't have anything meaningful to do while they're waiting, they become restless. So by making the walk longer, giving the passenger something to do in between, solved the problem. So let's zoom out again in this passage for just a second and look at a few months before this. Joseph receives the news that Mary is expecting. Often we focus all of our attention on Mary this time of year, but let's look at Joseph for just a couple of minutes. And I want you to maybe think a little bit about what is he experiencing? Joseph finds himself at a place in life that was much different than what he probably pictured or imagined. And we see that in Matthew 1:18. You don't need to turn there. Just listen as I read this. This is how the birth of Jesus the Messiah came about. His mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be pregnant through the Holy Spirit because Joseph, her husband, was faithful to the law and yet did not want to expose her to public disgrace. He had in mind to divorce her. Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph. It's different than a modern-day engagement. They had been committed to one another by their families for many, many years. This was a legally binding contract. And for this pledge to be broken off, it would require the certificate of divorce. So the only thing that separated this pledge from marriage was consummation. which they refrained during this betrothal period. And so for them to end their relationship, it would be more than just, oh, let's break up, we're not getting along. It'd be more than a status change on Facebook. It would be a divorce. So you get the sense of the legal weight that's on this pledge. So putting this all together, knowing that they were pledged to be married and that they had not consummated their marriage, to learn that Mary was pregnant caused a crisis for Joseph. Suddenly, all of his plans and dreams come crashing down. Joseph was a righteous man, more than just a good guy that you'd meet on the street. He earned the title righteous because of this incredible commitment that he had to God. He did all that he was supposed to do, and now the reputation that he had worked so hard for was coming apart at the seams. At first, Mary tried to explain it, and Joseph wasn't buying it, and he was pretty sure no one else is going to buy that story. There was only one conclusion, and we all know what that would have been. There's only one explanation. So he had a couple options. He could have Mary shamed and disgraced by the community because of her adultery. She could have been mocked and humiliated. I mean, Joseph no doubt was hurt, devastated, angry. But rather than expose Mary to public disgrace, he decides it's just best to divorce her in the background, quietly. And just then, we read in Matthew chapter 1, as we continue to read, it says this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said this, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. So after Joseph hears the news from Mary, right, and after he's devastated and after he's angry, now the angel shows up on the scene and says, oh, by the way, not the best timing. Now his plans change again. He had in mind to divorce her quietly, and now the truth is revealed to him. Now, Joseph was a carpenter, which tells us a few things about him. He probably liked and depended on details, blueprints, maybe a supply list. He no doubt enjoyed seeing in his mind how things, when he would build them, how it would all come together in the end. You see where this is going? Maybe he liked to control life a little bit. He liked to know what was going to happen next. And the first words out of the angel's mouth that calmed the sea of the life for of Joseph's life, don't be afraid. But what about my reputation? Don't be afraid. But what about, don't be afraid. And like Joseph, maybe have you, or are you experiencing the stress of responsibilities or work or relationships? Joseph had a choice. He could either continue on and live a self-reliant life, and he could take both of his hands and grab life and make it work. Manipulate it, twist it, control it, or he could live God-reliant. Remember, waiting is not the issue. It's what you do while you're waiting. And in one way or another, we're all in a season of waiting. What will we do while we wait? As God unveils little by little his transcendent plan for your life, we can choose to live self-reliant and not experience the nearness of God. Or we can choose to live God-reliant and experience the nearness of God in our lives. We cling, so Joseph, he clung to don't be afraid, and we cling to passages like Psalm 46:1 that says, God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Or Matthew 11:2, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Or Psalm 32:8 that says, I will instruct you and teach you in the way that you should go. I will counsel you and watch over you. Or 2 Corinthians 12:9 that says, "But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.'" In order to trust God's plan, as confusing as it might be at times, look through all three parts of the lens. Because when you see him at a distance, you desire to obey him in the intermediate. And when you see him in the distance and obey him in the intermediate, you experience him in the near. Let me leave you with one thing. It's a challenge for this week to take some time this week and see God through life's progressive lens by asking yourself, what impact does it have on my life knowing that God is far away, transcendent, and near, imminent, at the same time? Another question might be, am I doing the next thing that I know that God has asked me to do? And the third thing, how am I experiencing God today? Father, thank you for your word, and it is my prayer, Lord, that you would use this message, use your word in our lives. And maybe there's some folks here this morning that they are finding themselves in that place of waiting. And our natural go-to, God, if we had to confess, is that we become self-reliant because we don't like to wait. Even when we know that you are working out this perfect plan for us that you hold outside of time and space, we get eager. God, there could be some people here, Lord, that are just finding themselves in that place of wondering what you're up to or when you'll come through or when you'll hear our prayer. God, help us to take a step back and to see you in the distance and to know that you are faithful and to see you in the intermediate, that we would just do what you're asking us to do and that we would experience you up close and personal. In Jesus' name I pray.